Hey everybody, this is Pierre Quinn and you're listening to the Leading Wild Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On episode number 7, we'll be talking about the Revision Conference, why challenges are so successful, the long game versus the short game, when it's time to let go, and of course, we'll be talking about the Revision Conference. So listen up. Our team is super excited about the Revision Conference coming up October 29th, Baltimore, Maryland, University of Maryland, Baltimore campus. And we really just want to see you in the building. The Revision Conference is a half-day personal development, professional development session, really designed to help you dream, imagine, and plan again around the areas of your life calling. We had the first one July 19th at Bowie State University, and it was an incredible experience, a room full of dreamers, a room full of thinkers, a room full of individuals who've been nudged to feel like something needs to be different in their lives. I need to start a business. I need to be a better leader on my job. Something's not quite right with my health, with my finances, with my relationships. And we were in the room just shelling out practical steps for radical life change. And it was an incredible experience. The feedback that we got was amazing. And we decided, the crew decided to do it again. So October 29th, University of Maryland, Baltimore campus, we want you in the building for the Revision Conference. Here's the website, revision2017.eventbrite.com. revision2017.eventbrite.com. Use the promo code October. Use the promo code October. And we want you in the building. And no matter what walk of life you come from, there'll be somebody to speak to you and to speak to your situation. We'll have therapists in the room, life coaches, marketing professionals. We'll have media producers. We'll have a couple of pastors. We'll have a couple of creatives in the room. And it's really an amazing experience to dialogue and to connect with those who are also looking to make major life change, to become your personal best, to become your professional best. And you get insight on how to do that at the Revision Conference. October 29th, 2017, University of Maryland, Baltimore campus, revision2017.eventbrite.com. We want to see you in the building. Now, the Revision Conference is different than other conferences that I've been to, mostly because of the interactive element of the Revision Conference. And many people said that they really appreciated that who attended the first one. Because you don't want to spend money or to block off half of your day to do something that's going to be boring, that's going to be mind-numbing, that's just going to drag on and on and on and on. And meetings have a tendency to do that. I know a lot of us in our personal space, well, in our professional space, in the ministry space, meetings are just a part of life. And there's nothing that can ruin your day quite like a bad meeting. So I just wanted to hand out some tips and some suggestions on how to facilitate a better meeting. And if you're not facilitating, you're participating, how to be a better meeting attendee. Let's talk about facilitation. Now, if you've never chaired a meeting, it's a unique experience depending upon the subject matter of the meeting or the agenda and depending upon the individuals who attend. And for the past several years, I've been chairing church leadership meetings in my role in pastoral ministry. And what you find in church meetings are unique personalities. And they're not just in church business, church board, church leadership meetings. They're in all meetings. But you'll find individuals who always have something to say. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that what they have to say is relevant, that it contributes strongly to the conversation. But they just want to be heard. For whatever reason, they just want to be heard. And they always have something to say. Then you'll have individuals who always want to say something, but for whatever reason, they don't. These individuals are usually opinionated after the meeting. They'll talk to you after the meeting. They'll give feedback after the meeting. But in the meeting, in the intensity of the meeting, you'll see the look on their face, or you'll read their body language and recognize, well, they got something they want to say, but for whatever reason, they're not saying it. You have some individuals who are not going to say anything at all. They don't want to say anything. They don't want to contribute to the conversation. They're just there. They're just there so they don't get fined. If you remember that quote from Beast Mode not too long ago, they just don't want to get fined. They're checking off a box. Their capacity gives them the privilege to sit at this seat, and they're not going to contribute much to the conversation. And then you have those individuals who more than just have something to say. They want to dominate. They want to control the conversation. They want to direct the meeting. They want to take ownership. And much of meetings in that space, in the volunteer space, really has to do with the management of personalities. So it's really important for you to be firm. Now, some people will take firm as being mean, but you have to be really firm in helping people stick to the agenda at hand. And that's not always easy. Well, and that's why it's important to have an agenda. If you're going to call a meeting, if you want people, if it's just a casual conversation, a checkup or a check-in, that's one thing. But if you're going to have something longer than a half an hour, longer than an hour, and you want people to put their heads together and come up with solutions to different challenges related to your organization, you are going to need an agenda. And the agenda is important to keep everybody on task. It answers the question of why. We know the what. The what is the discussion, but the why is very important. Why are we here? Why am I sacrificing my time? And the agenda is a reference point so that when the conversation sometimes can go off the wall or go left or just run away from you, you can use the agenda to bring people back to focus. It's also important, if you're facilitating a meeting, if you're chairing a meeting, to not be afraid of the different personalities. The people who try to dominate, help them to minimize and say to them, well, we've heard from you on this matter. We want to hear from someone else. The individuals who you can tell they have something to say, help them transition to being inside of the conversation. And you can ask them, if you notice that, okay, Pierre's reserved in the meeting, you say, well, Pierre, what are your thoughts on this? What's your perspective on this issue? And bring them into the conversation. Now, for the people who like to dominate the meeting, you don't allow them to dominate. And I know that's easier said than done, but don't allow them to dominate, to take over the meeting. Bring them back to task. Sometimes you need to change the order in which you call on individuals, and they'll put their hand up, and sometimes you'll have to skip over them and let other people give their opinions and weigh in before them, because they'll take over the conversation. And it's not always an easy thing to do. The same goes for individuals who, you know, they're not going to say anything. Even before the meeting, say, hey, we got this issue that we're trying to discuss as a group, and I would really like you to weigh in. I would really like you to think about a solution or think about an angle that we haven't paid attention to. And your contribution to the conversation is really going to be valuable to our team. So prompt them beforehand to contribute. Now, if you're just attending a meeting, and I'm sorry, a lot of us in our professional experience or volunteer ministry space, we attend a lot of meetings that we don't chair. And that is challenging sometimes, especially when you're around someone who's not doing a very good job of facilitating the discussion in the meeting. So here are some suggestions on how to be a better meeting attendee. And the first one I would say is take notes, partially to keep yourself awake if you know you're sitting in a meeting where people have the tendency to go on and on. But also, so when subsequent meetings happen, your notes can help to jog memory around some of the discussions that you have had. So taking the notes keeps you aware, keeps you alert, and you'll need that. You're documenting what's happening, because when you have subsequent meetings, there are often times where people miss points, or they miss what the discussion was about. And at meetings, you have the person is designated as a secretary, as a scribe, and that's important. But you want to make sure that you keep your own notes during the meeting. Another thing that's helpful when you're attending a meeting is to especially when a discussion is getting out of hand, you can help point the chair back to the agenda. And you can say, Madam Chairperson, we are talking about this specific agenda item, and our conversation is not relative to this agenda item. Point of order is, in Robert's rules of order, you're pointing out the fact that something is not quite going right, and you want to bring the attention back to the right policy or practice. So you say, point of order, Mr. Chairman, we're not discussing what we said we were going to discuss in the agenda. Another way to be a better meeting attendee is to watch those facial expressions. Now, I'm guilty of this, and I wrestle with this, but watch those facial expressions. When you don't agree with what's going on, there sometimes, if you're like me, your face, everything is written all over your face. So practice being reserved and not always wearing your feelings on your sleeve or on your face. And that's an easy way to shoot down someone's ideas, that you just wear your stuff on your face. Now, I'm challenged by that as well. I've had people who are in meetings with me say, man, we could tell by the look on your face that you were not happy, or, you know, people are sometimes scared to comment because of that facial expression. So learning how to manage those expressions so that people are not intimidated to the point where they don't participate, or you're antagonistic. So hopefully, from the perspective of a facilitator or just from a meeting attendee, hopefully some of those tips will help you to have a better meeting experience. Speaking of experience, how's your experience been with this podcast? Now, we've had a handful of reviews on iTunes, and we've really loved and appreciated the reviews. Those who discovered the podcast and those who listen to it, we've appreciated your reviews, because it's telling us, man, what we're doing here is good. Now, for those of you who have not reviewed, just want to encourage you to review. Leave me a review on iTunes. Let me know what you think. That's what makes the podcast more discoverable. It comes up more in queries as people rate it, easier to pass along, and share it with your friends and family members. Share it with acquaintances, people that you work with, these leadership tips and insights that we're sharing in this podcast. So leave me a review on iTunes. Also on my YouTube channel, Pierre Quinn TV, we upload the audio from the podcast to YouTube. So you can check it out there and subscribe there as well. So I'm in the middle of a challenge. I'm in the middle of a 100 push-up challenge. Now, haven't done swimming this week. Down a car. We had two cars, and one of our vehicles is down. So we've been wrestling with our schedule with one car, and that's really crept into my swimming schedule. So we're trying to get back on track with that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I'm in the midst of a challenge with my mastermind group, with my band of brothers, and it's the 100 push-up challenge. Now, I mentioned this in the previous podcast episode, 100pushups.com, and I'll put that in the show notes. Just really, man, just these push-ups are, if you're not a push-up person, if you weren't during the military, you know, you weren't a super, super athlete, you know, sometimes something like the push-ups can do a number on you. But we're in the middle of this push-up challenge. And let me tell you why this challenge is working and why other challenges work. Now, there's these hashtag challenges that we see on social media. And those work because the commitment is low. It's a low commitment. You just have to do the thing and hashtag it. So if it's I don't know if you remember on social media, it was the slap cam challenge, where you recorded yourself slapping somebody else. And that's really a low commitment, low barrier of entry. You just got to hit somebody in the face, record it, upload it to social media, and hashtag it. Then you have the ice bucket challenge for ALS. You know, you got to just dump ice water on yourself and be frozen. And the purpose is to bring awareness to ALS. There's so many, many challenges going on right now, and many of them are not good, they're not helpful, they're not encouraging, they're just for entertainment value. But those things work because, one, because the barrier of entry is low, it doesn't take a lot of commitment, And two, there's a community of people who feel like you don't feel like you're doing it alone, because even though you haven't interacted with other people, the hashtags provide a network or community of individuals who are interested in the same thing. So I'm doing this 100 push-up challenge with my mastermind group, with this band of brothers that I'm with. And this the reason why it's working is because, and I've mentioned this before, is because of the accountability aspect. If there was no accountability aspect to this push-up challenge, I wouldn't do it. So I'm on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday push-up routine based on the push-up pyramid on 100pushups.com. I'm on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. And as part of it, I have to record the videos and share it with my mastermind group so they can verify, they can visually verify that I've been doing the push-ups. And what that is creating is a sense of community. It's creating a sense of community and a sense of accountability. And for many of us, we don't achieve what we want to achieve, or even what we say we're going to achieve, because we don't have a sense of accountability built in, and we don't have a sense of community built in. And that's because sometimes we're very selfish. We want to be the only people who accomplish this goal, oftentimes to separate ourselves from other people. We want to be the only person who writes a book. We want to be the only person who loses weight. We want to be the only person that starts a business. We want to be the only person that's creative in ministry or starts a successful YouTube channel or writes an impacting blog. We want to be the only person. And it's really selfish when you're the only person, because you're not learning from anyone else and you're not pouring into someone else. So it's very important that you develop a group of people who can hold you accountable, but also who you can bounce ideas off of and who can really support you and encourage you. Challenges work because challenges have a community feel built into them. They have a community experience built into them. And it's helpful if you're trying to accomplish something major that you build a community experience around it, that you build some accountability around it. And I would love to hear the projects that you're working on right now. You can drop me a line at prcquinn.com and you'll see this episode 7 of the podcast. And below the upload of the podcast is a comment section. I'd love to hear the projects that you're working on right now and what effectiveness or success would be like in this project if you had a band of people around you to support you and to encourage you. Or if you already have a band of individuals, a mastermind group, or a band of brothers or sisters around you, how is that experience? So prcquinn.com and look at episode 7 of the podcast and put your notes there. Now, that doesn't take away from leaving me a review on iTunes, because that's really, really important. That doesn't take away from subscribing or from following or liking my Facebook page, Mr. Pierre Quinn. Doesn't take away from that at all, but I'd love to hear your comments on how a band of people around you to hold you accountable, that's how that sense of community would help you in the goals that you've made for yourself. And I hope you got some goals. I hope you have some goals. Listen, I really hope you have some goals. I really hope you have a set of things that you're looking to accomplish for your life. I really hope that you got notepads and Evernote. Evernote is an app for note taking that I use, and I'll put that in the show notes. I hope you got some Evernote or some Wunderlist, which is a list generating app or list creating app. It's a journal, something with some goals that you have marked, that you have written down. And I hope you've been strategizing around those goals. And I hope your goals are not just short-term goals. What happens for a lot of us is that we develop these short-term goals somewhere around January with the whole New Year's Eve thing. We develop these short-term goals, and then we do it, and we finish the goal, and there's nothing after that. I was watching a guy on social media. His name is Jason Francis. Look him up on social media. His name is Jason Francis. And he was talking about, he was tired of these short term fixes. He said he's done P90X and he's done Insanity. And none of those things really stuck to him because they didn't create a new lifestyle. It was just a short term goal for him. And a lot of times in our lives, we play the short game. We look for momentary gain. We look for short-term wins. We look to just get the guy or get the girl. We look to just make the money. We look to just get the job or start the business or just finish the degree. Long-term stuff or short-term stuff. It's the long-term stuff that really sticks. It's the long-term stuff that takes a while to build. I'm growing this platform as a leadership influencer, as a leadership student. I don't really like the word expert or guru because I feel like that's a bit salesy. But in terms of being a leadership influencer and a leadership student, it's a long-term game. I've been at this a couple of years, and I'm starting to make traction and starting to generate a buzz and starting to create partnerships and collaborations. But that's after years and years of work. And I could see how life would be if I just had the short-term goals to get speaking engagements, short-term goals to write a book, and just have those short-term goals over and over and over again, which doesn't provide me with much traction. So yeah, I wrote the book. Yeah, I wrote two books, a leadership book and a devotional. Yeah, I got speaking engagements. I got one next Wednesday with the Maryland Association of Nonprofits. So I'm looking forward to that because I'll be teaching content exclusively from Leading While Green, my first book. So I've had all of those experiences and for the most part, those have just been short-term things. Long-term is building a business. Long-term is being known as a leadership influencer. Long-term is being sought after for leadership development and leadership coaching. Those are long-term goals. Long-term six-figure income as an international speaker. Long-term goals, get out of debt. Long-term goals of being able to employ friends and family members. That's long-term stuff. And the challenge with the long-term stuff it is that it requires some stick-to-itiveness. It requires some hanging in there, requires some bumps and bruises. You can get the long-term stuff all day, but once you get the long-term, you can get the short-term stuff all day. But once you get the short-term stuff, if you don't have a longer range plan behind it, you will eventually lose out to individuals that have a long range plan. So you'll get speaking engagements hand over fist, but you'll never grow your platform. You'll get clients. You'll get clients. You'll start the business. Your ministry will have impact and it will touch lives, but it will do it in short bursts, and it won't have the impact that it can have without that long range planning and long range goals behind it. And that's one of the things that I'd love to be able to chat with you about at the Revision Conference. October 29th in Baltimore, Maryland, on the University of Maryland Baltimore campus. I want to talk to you about long range and short range goals and the short game versus the long game, and how you need a balance of both, but how you need those long term goals, that long game, that stick-to-itiveness to hold on till the end. Now, speaking of holding on to the end, how do you personally know when it's time to let something go? How do you know when it's time? We talked a bit before about these fast food restaurants that are doing renovations close to where I live. And then there's the McDonald's that's close to my subdivision that just knocked everything down, started from scratch, from the rocks, from the dirt. They're building a new McDonald's location. Well, how do you know when it's time to just renovate, or when it's time to just start all over? We're kind of sad because been driving this van for 7 years. Yeah, about 7 years. We bought a van. We bought a used van when I was in seminary. I think it had one owner. It was in excellent condition. It's a great, great van. I think the lady who sold it to us only used it for catering, and she used it to take her kids to Girl Scouts or something like that. But it was in excellent condition, drove extremely well, and we had it for 7 years. We're over 220,000 miles on it. When we got it, it was about 100-something thousand miles on it, I think I'll have to ask my wife, but great condition, used van. It was 2002 or 2003 Dodge Caravan. and it's time. It was time to have the van inspected because we live in the Maryland area, but we just never had the van inspected. Tags expired. If you live in Maryland, you know how that goes. You have to get a state inspection, and then after the state inspection, you can take it to the MVA, Motor Vehicle Administration, and get the tags and the license plate. So, got a temporary permit, temporary tag to put on it. Took it to inspection. Inspection said, okay, it's going to cost you $900 to get everything fixed to pass the inspection. And I was like, okay, well, I think I can, I don't really want to buy something, but I think I can swing that. So I said, okay, let's get this done. Then talked to the mechanic. They said, the van's rusting at the bottom. Like, in order for you to pass inspection, you're going to have to get some body work done. And the mechanic says to me, he said, listen, if it was my car, check and see how much the body work is, but it's not really worth it. You're going to end up spending a couple thousand in this van, and it's not worth that. And I started thinking about all the memories and all of the great times in the van and traveling across the country. And then wrestling with this idea that I want to save it. Maybe I want to put a couple thousand dollars into this van because, you know, can't really, we're at the place where you want a car, but you're looking at your budget and you're looking at how things align and you're looking at what's coming down the road and you're saying, well, maybe if I just hold on to it a little bit longer, and you're thinking, man, this would be so much easier if we could just fix this thing and get it back on the road and not have to go through the challenges of trying to get it back up to speed and all of that stuff. But my wife and I, we came to the conclusion that, you know, we had a good run. We had a good run with this van that's taken us across the country, tons of memories with our family in this van. But it's time for it to go. It's time for it to go. So we're trying to strategize. We're trying to budget around how we're going to get this new vehicle. And I'm looking at the van as it's parked, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, maybe we'll just get the body work done and keep wrestling back and forth and just struggling with, it's really time to let this thing go. We had a good run, over 100,000 miles, tons of memories. It had a good run, and maybe it's time to let it go. And it's hard for me to let it go because my feelings are involved. Now, I need to ask myself, what's the wise thing to do? And the wise thing to do is probably to move on and to find something else. 7 years out of a used car is great. And the level of work that you start putting into it, if you have a used car, it gets to a point when you start dumping money into it and it becomes a money pit. And then you go from $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 in, and it's not worth it. It's time to walk away. So maybe there's something in your life that you're struggling with that it's clearly time to walk away. I know you got emotions, you got memories involved, but it's time to go. Maybe it's time to leave the job. Maybe it's time to shift ministry projects. Maybe the volunteering of the nonprofit, it's run its course and it's time for you to transition to something else. I know it's hard, but weigh the pros and cons and ask yourself what the wise thing to do is and move in that direction. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. Want you to leave me a review on iTunes. Really appreciate that. It helps us get this out to more people. And we want you at the Revision Conference, October 29th, University of Maryland, Baltimore campus. We want you in the building. Revision2017.eventbrite.com. Use that promo code October for a special discount. And as always, I'm in this thing to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. So until next time, take care and God bless.